Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am, appropriately enough, your host, Michael Cutler. This is July the 18th, beautiful summer evening here in New York City. Ideal weather, beautiful blue skies all day. I hope the weather has been doing right by you as well, wherever you may be. Hope you've all had a wonderful week. And again, we are playing that incredible game of catch-up at the end of the week. So much going on, so much to talk about. You know that my focus is going to be on immigration, the continuing border crisis. I will have a guest with me shortly, Kevin Martin, who has done quite a bit of broadcasting, writing. He's an environmental contractor in the Washington-Baltimore area who has had it up to here or there or someplace with the failures of this administration. I'm looking forward to having Kevin join us. But those of you who are familiar with my program know that I am a retired senior special agent with the former INS, and you know that my contention, and I think it's becoming more and more evident to folks across this country each and every day, my contention has always been that rather than being the single issue that immigration is often portrayed at in the media and by all too many members of the political supposed leaders of our country, I use that term advisedly, leaders, immigration is arguably the most serious challenge and threat, not only confronting the United States, but confronting Americans from coast to coast, border to border. We are not a country of four border states. Ladies and gentlemen, we are a country of 50 border states. Any state with an international airport has access to America's thousands of miles of meandering coastline or lies along the northern or southern borders are all certainly to be considered border states. But this, again, is part of that game of obfuscation being played by all too many people who stand to literally and figuratively make out like bandits by taking down America's borders so that they can profit, gain money, gain power, gain whatever it is they're looking for, while at the same time leaving America and Americans vulnerable to members of international terrorist organizations, transnational gangs, aliens with dangerous diseases, and or foreign workers who would either outright displace American workers or by their presence and by flooding our labor market drive down the value of labor, drive down our wages, worsen the working conditions of Americans. And this, of course, is something that our immigration laws are supposed to prevent, something that the mega wealthy, not the millionaires, folks, but the billionaires want to change. What they want to reform about immigration is not about helping people, but about driving down wages and increasing their profits. Because we all know that if there's anything that an individual worth billions of dollars needs, it's more money. And so here we are. But finally, I think, as that expression was used during the Second World War, the sleeping giant is finally awakening. The sleeping giant, folks, are you, me, and all of our 300 million fellow Americans. What this president has done and has failed to do at our nation's southwest border, the border that's supposed to separate the United States from Mexico, has driven home the point beyond anybody's doubt whatsoever that there is no desire to protect America or Americans. There is no desire to look out for the well-being of the citizens of our country or represent the needs, the wishes, the concerns of our citizens. And let's be real blunt. This is a problem created by both parties, exacerbated, no doubt, by this party, this president in particular. But really, do you think that most Republicans are really upset? See, they are getting what they want to satisfy the people lining their pockets with campaign contributions. And what do they want? Cheap labor. And as the chant would go, when do they want it? Now. So they can criticize Obama. They can excoriate him publicly. But meanwhile, each and every single day, the flood of illegal aliens continues unabated into our country, and it's not just across the southwest border. The southwest border is certainly significant. No two ways. It's got to be sealed up. It's got to be plugged. There's got to be integrity to that border. But there also has to be integrity to the entire immigration system. And that is something that this administration doesn't want to give us. And that's something that the other party, the Republicans, don't want to provide for us either. Let me bring on my guest, Kevin Martin. Happy Friday. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael, for having me on once again.
Absolutely. And, before we get to our conversation, I just want to put two websites out, and then I'm going to ask you to tell the folks about any website you want to promote, and then we'll get into the meat of our discussion. And, of course, listeners are urged to call in if they like. The phone number to call is 310-982-4145. 310-982-415. But the two websites I want you guys and gals out there to check out, first, my own personal website, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. I'm going to venture a guess that you're familiar with it, that that's probably or likely how you came to be able to listen to my program tonight on Blog Talk Radio on the USA Radio Network. But again, michaelcutler.net is my website, and I've also been a senior fellow with a terrific organization for quite some time, Californians for Population Stabilization, CAPS Web, C-A-P-S. CAPS Web is their website, and you know what's remarkable is that for quite some time now, CAPS has been talking about all of these issues that nobody else wants to talk about. They have a whole team of writers that have been doing a really great job of discussing the issues that, again, the mainstream media won't discuss. And, in fact, today, if you go to their website, there's an article about how there are water inspectors marching all over California. There is a drought. And, of course, when you don't have enough water to go around, the obvious solution is to bring in more people, don't you think, Kevin? So think about that. There's not enough jobs. There's not enough water. We are in crisis mode. We're concerned about how we're going to dig out of this hole. And Washington would tell us that the solution to water leaking into the bottom of your boat is apparently to drill another hole, because magically the water will go out that second hole while we're on the topic of water. They've also been hammering away on this flood of humanity, speaking about floods again, coming across the southern border. And there's a real good article today about how demonstrations, not by illegal aliens, but finally, hallelujah, by American citizens across this great nation are now springing up spontaneously, and really spontaneously, not the staged nonsense we see in May from the illegal aliens who emerge butterfly-like from their cocoons to stand on street corners and scream and make demands on our country, but by American citizens who, as in the movie The Network, make the point that we're mad as hell and won't take it anymore. So, again, go to capsweb.org, go to michaelcutler.net, but wait till after the program is over. Kevin, finally, thank you so much for being a guest on my program. I hope you had a great week this past week.
Yes, I actually did, and thank you for that introduction. And, Michael, you're so right. As I told you earlier, I was actually in the military. And when
By
I was
the way,
on my Navy
I have to stop. I have to stop you and thank you for your service. I think it's vital. We do that for any person who has served our country so nobly, loyally, and courageously. So I thank you for your service, Kevin.
Thank you. And you talk about drilling a hole in a boat and saying, "Oh well, if you drill one hole, the water that leaked in will leak back out."
Yep.
It reminds me of a time I was on my ship and we had hit a rock. We hit an uncharted underground rock. Well, the geniuses on my ship decided, we'll put a sump pump down in the hole and pump the water out over the side.
Are those
and
people in Congress now, by the way? Are they in Congress right now?
I believe so. So I walked by my XO one. I walked by my XO one day. We were both walking in the hangar bay, and I asked him about it. I said, and I finally ended the conversation. I said, "Exec, doesn't that defeat the purpose when we're out in the middle of the ocean? Where are we pumping the water to?" And he just kind of looked at me. He kind of looked at me and hunched his shoulders, and we just both walked away laughing. You know, we stepped over the hose, But I let him go first. And I said, dude, he greeted me. And I said, we're out in the middle of the ocean. We're pumping water over the side, but we're on top of the ocean. Doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose? He hunched, like I said, he hunched his shoulders, and we both walked away laughing. But to honestly get to you, honestly, we've had that fun moment. But this is not a funny issue.
No, it's not.
This is not a funny issue at all, Michael, because, first of all, the reason you're seeing people rise up and the reason that you're seeing people start to protest is because they know what's coming. They know what's coming. They've seen it in other communities. They've seen it in these sanctuary cities. Okay? It's like I tell people, you have these illegals who drunk drive, run into someone's car, hits and kills them, and they tell them, okay, well, we want you to show up in court. I mean, they give them bond. Let them go. Tell them we want you to show up in court, and they never do. They go back
surprise, and half the time they don't even know what name to put on the paperwork.
Exactly.
That's one of the risks of undocumented. You know, you're right, Kevin. And by the way, that's the reason I used to argue bail in court when I was working with other agencies or even as an immigration agent. Very often I was called upon to provide immigration information because that goes to the likelihood of flight. The issue of bail is interesting. I haven't spoken about it in a long time, so I'm really glad you raised the issue. You know, the idea to bail is to say that, okay, we're going to let somebody walk out of jail today with the expectation that they're going to return when they need to return. But in order to do that, there's two factors that are taken into account. Number one, if we let this guy out, is he a total sociopath and likely to rape, kill, or set fire to buildings? Number two, if that's not a problem, fine. But now the next question is the risk of flight. What's the likelihood that this person, if released, will come back? I remember in one bail case, the situation was so egregious. My friends at Customs, back then Customs was separate from Immigration, grabbed a guy that was transporting $1 million to a drug cartel in Colombia, and there were a whole bunch of factors. He was using multiple false names, had come in as a student, didn't run the border, hadn't attended school. It turned out to be my alma mater, believe it or not, in 3 years. So everything he said was a lie. Three false sets of identity, here illegally, and he had access to at least $1 million that he sent back to the cartel. What's the likelihood this guy is going to come to court when he's supposed to? And the answer is between slim and none, or as I said to the magistrate, the likelihood he will show up is such that this is like releasing a puff of smoke from a bottle. It is as difficult to recapture as would this guy if he be allowed out of the bottle. So the magistrate held him, and he was ultimately found guilty, and he went to jail for 7 years. But you're exactly right. We are undermining public safety and turning people loose.
And I live in one of these sanctuary cities, states of Maryland, and we have the same problem over here. These illegals, they run into people, a lot of times they're not fatal. They're just simple car accidents.
Right.
Okay. They're told to show up in court. The person they hit normally shows up in court because, you know, most Americans respond to a court summons.
Yep,
and
most.
I've seen so many police officers just standing there and have to throw their hands up because Pablo or whoever his name is decides not to show up. Or as one cop says, he gave me his name, but it didn't ever exist.
Right.
I don't know who he is. The address he gave me doesn't exist.
Right.
Okay, so what I'm basically saying to you, Michael, is that President Obama is talking about meeting with these Central American leaders to talk about immigration. Why are we meeting with Central American leaders to talk about immigration when Mexico gives them a 72-hour pass and tells them, get through the country and get the hell out?
Well, you're raising an excellent question. My mom used to say to me, may she rest in peace, that one-sided relationships aren't relationships. So let's look at the relationship, so-called, such as it is, that we now have between Mexico and the United States. Mexico takes its borders so seriously that there were reports not long ago of people being shot to death trying to run the Mexican border to the south, the border that's supposed to separate Mexico from Guatemala. They're so serious about the border that we now have an American Marine sitting in jail since March 31st because he inadvertently got on a road that he couldn't turn around on, wound up in Mexico with guns that were legal in our country, immediately notified the Mexican authorities as soon as he got to the border crossing and said to them, "I'm here by mistake. I just want to go back to the United States. If you would please let me go home. I'm not going to lie to you. I have three guns in the back of my truck. They are legal in the U.S. I know they're not legal here. I don't want to conceal anything from you. All I want you to do is let me turn around and head back to the United States." He was not only not allowed to turn back, his vehicle was seized. He's sitting in jail. And what was it, a week later, a Mexican official chopper, either military or law enforcement, winds up on the American side of that border. American airspace opens fire on U.S. Border Patrol agents. The President of the United States barely reacted to this blatant incursion by a foreign government's helicopter. Even if it didn't happen with the gunfire, it would have been bad enough. But then shooting at our Border Patrol agents, and barely a word from the White House, and not a word out of the White House about demanding that our Marine be returned. But meanwhile, a human tidal wave is headed all the way lengthwise through Mexico, obviously with the assistance of the Mexican cartels and the Mexican government. I'm not sure that there's a way to distinguish one from the other at this point. And our president is missing in action. Secretary of State Kerry, missing in action. Have I lost my mind? Am I getting this wrong, Kevin?
No, you're not getting it wrong, because first of all, okay, when this situation happened, and I watched the president's actions, and he says, "Oh well, I accept the apology of the Mexican president." Helicopters do make mistakes. Do not get me wrong.
Right.
Pilots make mistakes.
Absolutely.
They, just like you drive a car. Sometimes you drive down a dead end road, but
okay,
you don't make a mistake flying into someone else's airspace and firing on their law enforcement agent. That was a deliberate act, and this is not the first time.
Maybe they were returning bullets they borrowed from us. Is that a possibility? I was waiting for that excuse to come up. Well, we borrowed some bullets, and we were simply returning them along with a cup of sugar. Nothing happening now makes any sense.
But this isn't the only situation, Michael. Just the other day, they had the Mexican army take pot shots at some border agents. Yeah, on the other side of the border, when the border agents were going up to some of these quote unquote migrants, cartel members, whatever you want to call it. The Mexican army decided to open up with their Mardus. They didn't hit anything, thank God.
Thank God.
But you're firing close by law enforcement agents across the border. In most other nations, that would be an act of war.
You would think.
Yeah, but
you
this
would
president,
you he, would think. How do you think it would be greeted if our Border Patrol agents did something like that?
No. If our border agents did anything like that, they would have come across the border and arrested them because they've done it before.
Yes, they would have. And look at what happened to Ramos and Compey on those two Border Patrol agents on the prior administration. You see, the problem is that both political parties are in bed with the Mexican government. There's no two ways about this. This is about cheap labor. It's about a trading partner. It's about meeting the demands of the Chamber of Commerce in Washington. There are some local chambers of commerce that are very, very supportive of our position, so I always make that distinction. There are some really good chambers of commerce. The Chamber of Commerce in Washington, D.C. is pure evil. I have spoken to some of their people, and I will tell you that these folks are as anti-American as you could ever imagine. I had one guy from the National Chamber of Commerce at a hearing during a recess in the hearing tell me that the borders of the United States, I said they are our first and last line of defense. His response was they're an impediment to free trade.
Yeah.
That's all they think of. They are traitors, or maybe the word is traitors, traitors, free traitors.
And it's all about, and all of them are traitors, because first of all, when you decide to put, and as I said in my press release of Project 21, when you decide to put Americans second and the illegals first, you are a traitor in my book.
Absolutely.
Okay? When you decide that you're going to bring people into a community with the community, not even with the community's knowledge, you're going to sneak them in under the darkness of night, expose that community to all types of diseases that had been eradicated in America more than 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, you are a traitor.
Yes, you are.
I say to my friends, and I say to your listeners, thank God for those few congressional members who have stopped this train wreck so far, who have been able to stop this from passing Congress. Okay, those are patriots. The rest are traitors. We are
Congressman Cuellar from Texas, who's a Democrat, absolutely, he's doing the right thing. Of course, I have to comment on Jeff Sessions. It's funny, I was on with Lou Dobbs earlier this week talking about the issue, and Lou, to his credit, credited Congressman Cuellar, credited Senator Sessions. Of course, I have to add to that list my good friend and true leader in Congress, Lou Barletta, Congressman Steve King, Senator David Vitter, Senator Chuck Grassley. There is some real decent leaders. So, you know, people say, we got to get rid of all of them. I say, no, no, no. Be careful you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. 90% of the members of Congress need to be sent packing. But the few that are really on our side are national treasures. We need to support them in their reelection campaigns and do whatever we can to bolster their efforts because they're looking out for us. But isn't it outrageous that they are now in the minority?
Yeah, it's sad. It's sad that so many of our congressional members are in the pocket of big business, in the pocket of the Chamber of Commerce. But the sad thing about it, they're so addicted to big money.
Yep.
Okay, it's like a drug to them, that they will do anything that big money tells them to do. And what's really sad about it, and I often have a joke, Michael, I tell people, a young woman one time asked me, I was working on Capitol Hill, and she one time asked me, she said, what is it like to work on Capitol Hill? And I stopped and I mused for a second, and I said, you know what? Washington, D.C. is the only place where someone can get elected with a Sears sucker suit, $20 in their pocket, come to D.C. and 4 years later leave a multimillionaire.
Isn't that remarkable?
It's the only town, where you can come with a pair of hush puppy loafers, a Sears sucker suit, $20 to your name, and leave a multimillionaire with multiple book deals.
The odds are far better for them than the guy that goes to Las Vegas, don't you think?
Yeah, you have a better chance of getting struck by lightning twice than to leave Washington as a poor congressional member, or as Hillary Clinton say, flat broke. But you still be able to buy two mansions, one in D.C. and one in New York. But hey, that's just my thing. But anyway, really back to immigration. What I really am saying here is, now you are seeing the dangerous thing. They don't even want Americans taking pictures of these children crossing the border with lice, maggots, scabies, all types of diseases. They just have Fox News is right now reporting there's a breakout of medical disease, scabies, pneumonia at a military base in California.
Yep.
What happens when someone crosses the border with Ebola? What happens when somebody crosses the border with dengue fever? What happens?
Well, you're right, and there's another problem. As our Border Patrol agents are serving as concierge service, as many as 40% of our agents, and they're going up to or grabbing the people who are turning themselves in, what I'm asking is who is not turning himself or herself in? Because while they're being occupied by this, what's happening behind the back? You know, the public is being misdirected by the politicians. Just like this nonsense, we have four border states, so we ignore the other 46 border states.
You
say, well, why is that? So there's misdirection. The Border Patrol is being misdirected also. While they're being bogged down with this massive flood, who aren't they able to chase after because they're otherwise occupied? This is creating a huge national security risk for the United States. Very few people are talking about that risk. You know, what I keep on saying is that we really should have as a starting point for any discussion on immigration the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. In fact, I wrote an article for Californians for Population Stabilization. They published it last week. I should probably put out an email about it. But I called it Immigration Meltdown, the Far-Ranging Consequences for America. See, it's not just what's happening along the border. It's what's now happening across the country. Congressman Steve Israel, out on Long Island here in New York, is screaming like a scalded cat or a stuck pig or you name it. Why? Well, this was a congressman who is 100% behind the DREAM Act, 100% behind comprehensive reform. And guess what? Now that they are moving these so-called children into his community out in Suffolk County, suddenly Steve Israel is very unhappy. He's telling everybody, oh, these people don't belong here. Well, wait a moment. Congressman, you laid out the welcome mat. You basically told them, like they used to say on The Price is Right, come on down. Well, they came on down, they're here, and now you don't want them? He is as much a part of the problem as is Obama, as is any member of Congress who has spoken favorably of comprehensive immigration reform or the DREAM Act. Any disagreement, Kevin?
No disagreement at all, because, see, for like I told you, most of these people who are pushing this, they are in the pocket of the big businesses. They're in the pocket of the Chamber of Commerce. I find it quite hypocritical that you have Bill Gates out here talking about we need an expanded guest worker program and amnesty, but he just laid off 18,000 people from his corporation.
That's right. All about trimming the cost. You see, what most people don't know... Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't want to step on you.
But I tell people also, if you want to have a guest worker program, look at it like this. Okay, the reason they want these illegals, because any one of them that raised too much cane, it's easy to get rid of them. Who is going to put their life in danger? Who's going to put their status in danger? Okay, if they get into this program and it takes 5 to 6 years or 10 years to get citizenship, and
that's,
they're working
No, you're getting that sideways. Let me just make a quick correction. What Gates wants is to greatly increase the number of H-1B visas, the so-called high-tech visas. And, in fact, Ted Cruz, who's a conservative, that's why I keep saying this isn't about left or right, folks. This is about right or wrong. Gates, Zuckerberg, Silicon Valley in general have pumped between $1.5 and $2 billion, with a B, billion dollars into pushing comprehensive immigration reform. Because what it would do, the amnesty program, which would undermine national security and public safety, is bad enough. That's on the side of the illegal aliens. But here we're not talking about illegal. We're talking about people legally permitted to enter the United States. By permitting them to enter the United States, they will wind up taking the jobs that Americans already have and desperately need to hold on to. So it's not just about illegal immigration. That's one of the misnomers about comprehensive reform. Let me read something, because I think you and my audience, and I think I've read this before, but I'm going to make the point here. First of all, this is what Alan Greenspan had to say when he testified for Chuck Schumer back on April 30th, 2009, before the Senate Immigration Subcommittee. And this is just an excerpt. There's more of it here if you go to capsweb.org, michaelcutler.net. I've also included this, by the way, in some articles that I've recently written. I've become a columnist for Front Page Magazine and for a brand-new publication, or I won't say brand-new, it's a couple of months old now, but Dr. Ben Carson is the founder of a publication in conjunction with the Washington Times called American Currency, C-U-R-R-E-N-T-S-E-E, American Currency Magazine. My friend, radio talk show host and radio entrepreneur Armstrong Williams is the executive editor. I now have several articles published in their magazine. But I quote this routinely because I can't say it often enough. Greenspan, when he testified for Schumer, talk glowingly about Gates, how Gates was right, how we need to bring in more workers, and he talked about both the bottom rung, the illegal aliens, and he talked about the high-tech workers. So let me just read two quick excerpts. Green,
sure.
And listen to the arrogance of this character. Greenspan said, "There are two distinctly different policy issues that confront the Congress. The first is illegal immigration, the notion of rewarding with permanent resident status those who have broken our immigration laws. It does not sit well with the American people. In a recent poll, two-thirds would like to see the number of illegals decreased." So Greenspan is telling you right off the top, I know what the Americans want, and they can go to hell. Because he made it clear, we know that two-thirds, and boy, oh boy, if you could win an election, you were on the Hill, anybody who could win with a 66% vote calls it a landslide. Am I right or wrong?
Right.
The average election is decided by 2%, 3%. When you win by two-thirds, you've done well. So he knows the great majority of Americans is opposed to illegal immigration, but he doesn't care because it goes on, it says, but there is little doubt that unauthorized, that is, illegal immigration, has made significant contribution to the growth of our economy. Between 2000 and 2007, for example, it accounted for more than a sixth of the increase in our total civilian labor force. The illegal part of the civilian labor force diminished last year as the economy slowed, though illegal still comprised an estimated 5% of our total civilian labor force. Unauthorized immigrants serve as a flexible component of our workforce. So understand what he's saying. This is perfectly okay for him. And if you're talking about 5% of our labor force being aliens who shouldn't be here, if we got rid of them, we would immediately be able to employ 5% more of our labor force who are Americans and lawful immigrants, but they have no intentions of doing that because they're not looking at the unemployment. And by the way, isn't it remarkable that they tell us we have a 6.1% unemployment rate and ignore nearly 100 million unemployed Americans? You know what I compare this to, Kevin? I think of this as a doctor coming out of the OR and telling the family, I'm sorry to tell you your uncle died, but the good news is he doesn't have a fever. So
how do you ignore
the obvious?
But see, how do you ignore the obvious is quite simple. When your main intent is making more and more money,
and that's where we come to the next part. And this is going to blow your mind. And for you folks out there, if you've never heard this before, if you suffer high blood pressure, take your pills now. Take your pills now because this will put your blood pressure through the roof, I promise you. He says this, that our skill shortage, I trust, will ultimately be resolved through reform of our primary and secondary education systems. And he even talks about the anticipation of Americans retiring. They haven't retired yet, but they're going to. So let's start bringing in foreign workers now. That comes a little bit earlier in the speech. I mean, it's lie after lie. There is no shortage, folks. The unemployment rate right now for high-tech workers is more than double what it is for all other workers. Does that sound like a shortage of high-tech workers? But then he said, here's the benefit. First, skilled workers and their families form new households. They will, of necessity, move into vacant housing units, the current glut of which is depressing prices of American homes. How nice is that to refer to a home lost to foreclosure as a vacant housing unit? A vacant housing unit, ladies and gentlemen, is an American home lost by an American family to foreclosure. And he says, of course, house price declines are a major factor in mortgage foreclosures and in the plunge in value of the great quantity of U.S. mortgage-backed securities that has contributed substantially to the disabling of our banking system. That's another lie. Greenspan, I doubt you're listening, but if you are, you're a liar and your nose is growing, so you look even uglier than you did this morning. Because the reality is the reason that we have the meltdown of the economy with the subprime mortgages for illegal aliens. They couldn't verify their identities any more than those police officers and those ICE agents and the Border Patrol agents can't verify the identity of the illegal aliens they're encountering. If you can't verify an identity, tell me, Kevin, how do you do a meaningful credit check?
how do you do a meaningful credit check? You're supposed to have, what, a social security number, name?
And they want to know the name of your firstborn, your blood type, and how many teeth are left in your mouth. And now we've got illegal aliens coming in with questionable identity documents, and they want to give these folks mortgages. And by the way, you know, the chickens are coming home to roost in New York, because what's interesting, this idiot mayor we have in New York, de Blasio, who proved my father's point that nothing is so good it couldn't get better or be so bad it couldn't get worse. We had Bloomberg, which was bad, and now we got de Blasio, who's giving illegal aliens identity documents, and the banks are screaming and saying, wait a minute, you now want us to give these people credit cards, and we can't verify that this is really their ID. So they're screaming because they were burnt once already.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that.
But like I told you, it's all about money, power, and influence. These people are going to do anything they think will allow them to remain in power, and whether
and
it be
to
Democrat,
get more money.
Republican, yeah, more money. I told you this is the only town I know where you can come with your name in your pocket and leave a multimillionaire.
I agree.
Okay.
So now we get to the last sentence, and then we'll go back
sure.
to our conversation about it. But this is the punchline, and this is what will send everyone's blood pressure through the ceiling. He then says, the second bonus of bringing in lots more high-skilled, highly educated foreign workers would address the increasing concentration of income in this country. The increase of income? In other words, someone's making too much money, and I'm going to give you a hint. He's not complaining about Gates, Zuckerberg, or himself. And he goes on and says, greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled would lower wage premiums, in other words, the salaries, of the skilled over the lesser skilled. Skill shortages in America exist because we are shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. Quotas have been substituted for the wage pricing mechanism. In the process, we have created a privileged elite whose incomes are being supported at non-competitively high levels by immigration quotas on skilled professionals. Eliminating such restrictions would reduce at least some of our income inequality. I'm actually working on an article right now for Front Page Magazine about that. So think about it. We hear all this blather about income inequality. There's this program that's on cable Last Week Tonight or something or other. This Brit sits there, and he was ranting and raving on his last program. At least half of the show was about income inequality. And he's talking about the mega wealthy. That's not what this issue of income inequality is about. Everyone thinks that this would go after the people who are the billionaires. They would emerge not only unscathed, but with more money in their pockets. What they're talking about is that they want to take the salaries of middle-class high-tech workers, whom Greenspan has the chutzpah to refer to as the privileged elite, and drive their wages down to where they're barely distinguishable from America's poor. That is why the middle class is going the way of the dinosaur. And we also know that there's a socioeconomic political relationship. You destroy the middle class, you destroy the level of democracy that a country enjoys. And that's the goal.
Yeah, but see, the goal is this. Here is the goal. The goal is to get these people into the system to employ them. To give them, because they know, if you know what I know, Michael, they're not going to raise too much hell when it comes to benefits, job, or actual pay, because the main concern of the illegals is to obtain citizenship.
No, I'm not talking about illegals. I'm talking about the legal. See, that everyone thinks that comprehensive reform is aimed at the illegals. The biggest issue for the wealthy is the legal side, which would drive down the wages. So we're not talking now about the minimum wage employees. We're talking about people making $100,000, $150,000 a year. They will suddenly be made to compete with people earning $50,000 a year.
But that's what I was getting
so
ready
it's not
to
just
get
the illegal. What I'm saying is it's not just the illegal side. It's the legal side also. It's about focusing all the attention on the middle class to get rid of what they call disparity or inequality in wages, to make middle class jobs basically fundamentally prevailing wage jobs at the bottom rung. So minimum wage will start to pretty much apply to people doing middle class jobs today.
Yeah, that's why you have, if you look at it right now in our job market, you have people who, let's call it what it is, they have PhDs, they have doctorates,
yep,
and they have master's degrees. But where are they working? Olive Garden, Home Depot, places,
yep,
like that. The prevailing, the minimum wage, the middle class is becoming the minimum wage class. As,
yes,
I call it, this is the Olive Garden economy. You go to college, you work hard, and you end up working at the Olive Garden.
Yep.
Okay, these are, then at the top, you have so much automation going on, okay, that there is, as you said very, very elegantly, the middle class is going the way of the dinosaur. Everywhere you look, Michael, there's either automation or there's wage stagnation.
Yep.
And what I'm saying is, if you are a legal immigrant, or even if you are an illegal immigrant, what is the one thing you have to do to remain in this country? Work. You have to work. And so you get that cheap labor. That's what I was saying when I put out my press release. That's why you have 92 million Americans out of work right now. Because,
yep,
Americans are not going to work for nothing. We want our benefits, okay? We want health care. We want bonuses. We want a salary where we can actually go out and buy a house, obtain a car, and do things like that. If you,
mm-hmm,
have an economy where you have to have a job, you can pay somebody next to nothing. You can pay them next to nothing. That's why you see so many good quality benefit jobs have disappeared in the last 6-8 years.
Yep.
This was all planned. Now you're telling me, Michael, that, oh, well, to be compassionate, you have to let these illegals in, or they're already in the system doing jobs that Americans won't do. I know plenty of jobs that any American would do, but no American is being hired.
That's right.
Because
that's,
it's
right,
easy, like I said, it's easier to bring in legals and illegals. They must work to stay. So I don't have to pay you next nothing. When I know that you have to be tethered to a job, when I know that if you give me too many problems, all I got to do is call up immigration to say, I fired him today. Okay,
yep,
I'm going to work for next to nothing. I'm not going to ask for too many benefits. This is all planned. That's what I said in my press release. If you have 92 million Americans, 30% unemployment in the black community, another, 21% in the Hispanic community, women are doing even worse, okay, and you're concerning yourself with, quote-unquote, children, who are supposedly migrant children who have been coming across the border, when most of them aren't children, most of them are 18 years old and older, why are you not putting your own country first?
Well,
why,
you know, here's the other thing. Even when we're dealing with 13- and 14-year-olds, what we're seeing coming out of Central America, and we've actually seen this in the streets of the United States with American kids, you have some communities where 12-year-old kids are gang members. When I was working with the police,
yeah,
up in Crown Heights in Brooklyn, we had 12-year-old hit men. I guess we,
yes,
called them hit boys, because they knew they would not go to jail. A drug dealer would give this kid a gun, and he'd say, you see that guy in that sweatshirt? When he walks into the building, I'll give you $100 if you pop him in the head. And sure enough,
so,
the guy would
only,
walk into the building
that,
and bang
just,
him. It was a homicide.
We just had a 13-year-old here across the river in Virginia. MS-13
yes,
gang member.
Yes, but
and
nobody
I'll
says
these,
that.
I'll
yeah,
tell you like this, Michael. He will cut out your tongue with the best of them.
Yes, and the problem is most people don't get it. People live sheltered lives. I remember one day there was a robbery in my neighborhood, and I live in a decent neighborhood. My neighbor was like, oh, my God, could you imagine someone committed a robbery? Now, I'm working in some of the toughest areas on that particular day. I was making some arrests of drug dealers. My neighbor says, my God, there was a robbery. I said, do you know how many robberies were committed today just in New York City? Do you have any idea? In this neighborhood? You know, everyone thinks they're living this little sheltered life. They don't understand that crime involves so many societies, so many children. You know, if you take kids and you put them into poverty, and I've gone into the buildings where rats are scurrying around in the hallways, where kids wake up covered with insects and they go to sleep at night without food, what would you be willing to do as a 15-year-old if you're under those circumstances? Better yet, what would you be willing to, I'm getting this sideways, what wouldn't you be willing to do to get out of that set of circumstances? If you go to bed hungry every night, and clean clothing and clean sheets are considered a luxury, and bullets are whizzing by your window at night, what would you not be willing to do? You would do anything. And for most of these kids who have no opportunities, the anything is to become involved in criminal activity. So their lives go down the tank, the lives of their victims go down the tank, and this vicious cycle continues, but the wealthy are living in their gated communities. If they're very wealthy, they have their own bodyguards. They don't even need to get a carry permit. They have armed protection, and they could blithely go about their business. They don't have to worry if the highways are overcrowded. They're above it all. They get in their helicopter. They're literally above it all. They don't have to wait on long lines at the airport. They get in their private jet airliner, people like Bloomberg. You know, it's remarkable. Bloomberg jumped up and down screaming about how the police weren't prosecuting people who trespass into public housing. And he said, you know, the people that live there want someone with a badge to ask them, who are you, why are you here? Well, you know what's remarkable? That's the question that the inspectors at ports of entry ask arriving aliens. How do I know? I did that job for the first 4 years of my career. So when Bloomberg screams about the threat posed by trespassers on housing projects and then wants to provide people with the key to the city who trespass on America, I call that a serious lack of mouth-ear coordination. His own ears don't hear what his own mouth is saying.
But people like Bloomberg, they can, what I'm saying, they can buy their way.
Yes, of course they can. And they buy their friends. They've probably been buying their friends the whole life. Do you really think Bloomberg could have an honest-to-God friend if he couldn't buy him or her?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Give me a break. This is a character who probably was very lonely until he had lots of money.
Yeah, and if you look at most of these people who are pushing amnesty, most of them don't have an honest friend in the world.
No.
Most of them don't have an honest friend in the world. Most of them never done an honest day's work. Okay.
They wouldn't even know how to begin to do an honest day's work or be accountable to a boss. In fact, Bloomberg bragged about the fact that he was fired from his first job. He thought it was funny.
And you're right. And see, that's what I tell people. I tell people, how can you tell me that I'm not compassionate because I don't support illegal immigration or I decide that I'm a nativist or whatever the hell Bill Richardson calls it? Okay.
Did
when
he
I'm
really?
Saying, okay. Yeah, he said anyone, how do you say, the Tea Party is made up of nativists and purists who do not understand the plight of immigrants. And I'm sitting there like,
wow.
you idiot. You don't understand the plight of Americans. Do you
so
know
he
what
understands
like
he doesn't care. He lacks compassion for his fellow countrymen. That's who lacks compassion.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to say is when I see my fellow Americans who do not have jobs,
right,
who are losing their homes, okay,
yep.
I'm sorry, Mike, it's a little hard for me to worry about, Pablo crawling across the border when my neighbor next door is backing up a U-Haul because his house has been repossessed after a year where he's had to move because he can't find a job or he's selling his house to move to another state to hopefully find a job. We are a nation who, you want to talk about immigrants? This great recession has made nearly all American immigrants because you have a class that's moving from place to place looking for jobs. What about the immigration in the United States? inside our borders. See, this is what I'm talking about. The people who can't afford to move, who can't afford to move to another city and find a job, they're going to do that. Those who can't are pretty much screwed. Okay, and then I'm getting lectured by the likes of Bill Richardson and Alan Greenspan and the rest of them, telling me I'm not compassionate if I don't believe in amnesty. What about compassion for my fellow Americans?
Well, that's exactly, but that's the question we should be asking. You know, by the way, I'm going to provide a little clarity. The difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. Nobody
exactly.
should be expected to let a burglar live in their house once they break in. You don't give the keys and registration to the car of the to the guy that steals the car. And they blithely say, well, they made undocumented entry. No, they made an uninspected entry. But if you want to talk about undocumented, what happens to somebody who makes an undocumented withdrawal from a bank?
They go to jail.
There you go. If we want to talk about undocumented.
Yeah,
I mean,
this is
insanity. The disconnect is wild. What I am hoping is that just like in that World War II movie, A Bridge Too Far, Obama has gone one step too darn far. I really hope that the folks out there are really paying attention to this. You know, you need to understand the way you're being really screwed over by your own elected representatives who are not representing you.
But you know what's really wonderful about all this? Americans are waking up. We're seeing these grassroots protests pop up in places I never thought I would see protests. Here in the state of Maryland, California,
yep.
blue states are saying hell to the no.
But you
okay,
know what? I'm a registered
I mean,
Democrat. How in the world did this ever get portrayed as a conservative issue? You're familiar with Barbara Jordan, correct?
Yes.
And what party was she a member of?
Wasn't she a Democrat, if I remember correctly?
Absolutely. She was a super liberal Democrat.
Yes.
And her position on immigration marches lockstep with ours. See, this isn't
right,
about
because,
left or right. This is about right or wrong.
But because, you know why it's about right or wrong? Because people know the results. We've seen what happens when you allow immigrants in the country. You have no way of controlling them. You don't have no way of summoning them. You have
illegal
no
aliens.
Way of...
Look, there's a. But that's why I keep making this very clear distinction. But
illegal
the system,
aliens.
The legal system lacks integrity today. I am a very big supporter of political asylum. My grandmother died in the Holocaust. As a B'nai B'rith president, and I was back in college. I participated in demonstrations outside the LBJ, the Lyndon Johnson White House. He was the president back in the mid-60s. And we asked him, please go to the Russians, convince them to allow Jews and other religious minorities to leave Russia, let them come to America, or go to any country that would have them. I still believe in political asylum. However, go back to what I read from the 9/11 Commission staff report. Terrorists today are using political asylum because there's no integrity to the process. The House Judiciary Committee, chaired by Bob Goodlatte from Virginia, had a hearing in December. And the hearing was about, and in fact I was able to provide some questions to that hearing. And that hearing was about how, believe it or not, members of the Mexican drug cartels have been provided with political asylum. The Tsarnaev family, the Tsarnaev brothers, remember the Boston Marathon bombing last year, last April 15th, that whole family
yes.
got political asylum. Now, asylum means I have a credible fear. If you send me home, I will face persecution or worse. Maybe I'll be killed. Maybe I'll be in prison because of my race, religion, ethnicity, political beliefs, or some factor of that nature. As soon as they got lawful status, what did they do? They bought airplane tickets and went home to Russia. Did they really have a credible fear? Of course not. But this isn't new. In 1993, January, a guy by the name of Mir Amil Kansi shot up the CIA. He was a Pakistani national. He killed two CIA officers, wounded three others. also lied on his application for asylum. Ramzi Youssef, 1 month later, first attack on the World Trade Center, killed six, injured over 1,000 people, over 1,000, inflicted $500 million in damages to the Trade Center complex, almost brought one of the towers down sideways. One of the ringleaders there had been granted political asylum. So if there's no integrity to the entire system, we have a problem. That was why I wrote an article, and if you get a chance, I recommend you all read this, and I recommend if you haven't seen it that you read it, Kevin. I wrote this piece for Front Page Magazine, and it was entitled Border Security and the Immigration Colander. Basically, what I wrote is that this entire all-encompassing focus on the Mexican border is a bit like claiming that you're willing to sort of halfway plug one hole in the bottom of a colander that you use to drain pasta, and now you can use that colander as a bucket. We're just going to ignore the fact that the water's going to pour out of all those other holes. And I said, now imagine if instead of carrying something innocuous like water, you're carrying a deadly substance, and if it leaks out, there's catastrophic consequences. Well, if our border leaks, it's not just people coming to do the menial jobs, and that creates enough problems all by itself, but we're also talking about fugitives from justice. We're talking about members of transnational gangs, international terror organizations, aliens with dangerous diseases, aliens who are severely mentally ill or sex offenders, because those are the categories of aliens who were supposed to be kept out by the inspections process. So when people sneak in, it's not only that they're coming to work illegally, but there's lots of other reasons why somebody would do that, and yet the politicians want to distract you so that you never realize why we really have immigration laws or borders in the first place.
Well, and you're so right. And a lot of these illegals who are coming here are criminals in their home country. They
yep.
have done things like, child molestation, sex trafficking, things like that. So they come into America, disappear into our cities, and their countries neither have the wherewithal or the conviction to come and get them. They say, oh, out of sight, out of mind.
And then meanwhile,
okay.
and by the way, there's a better one, too. Do you know that there are countries that refuse to provide us with travel documents for these people? You know why?
Yes.
They don't want them back. The guy's a gangbanger.
Mm-hmm.
He's been molesting little girls. You got him. He's all yours. We're not giving you a passport. When those countries fail to give us a travel document, we are unable to get rid of them. There are thousands of these wackies and thousands of these serious criminals who we are stuck with because there is no way to remove them back to their home country because their home country will not take them back. We are stuck. So the border swings one way. They get in and they don't ever go home because their home country won't have any part of them.
No, and then we're lectured by their leaders. These people are
yes.
just simple migrants who want a better life.
Sure,
and
they want the money they send home. And they do you know, I keep hearing about this economic meltdown, and you see it on all the news programs. Do you know what they will never say on those news programs when they talk about the economic meltdown? That every year our deficit increases by roughly $500 billion because of remittances being sent home to the foreign countries from which the foreign workers come. And do you know which country on this planet gets the greatest amount of remittances from the first world?
China.
No, India. China comes in second.
Well,
Mexico comes
right.
in third. So the point that I'm making, folks, this isn't about Latinos. It's not about brown skin. It's about making one distinction. The one distinction that you're never allowed to make without being accused of being a nativist or racist and so forth, it's the word alien. The term alien simply means any person, not a citizen or national of the United States. But there is one place where the open borders anarchists do allow you to use the word alien. Do you know where that is? Do you know the exception where you're allowed to use the word alien?
Where is that?
In the DREAM Act. Because the A in DREAM Act is alien minor. Suddenly, because they were so eager to evoke the imagery of the American dream that no longer applies to Americans, it's okay to use the word alien if it's in conjunction with alien minors in the DREAM Act. How remarkable
you know,
is that?
I want your listeners to know something else. Today is Friday. Today is Friday.
Yes.
Now, take an estimation of how many billions of dollars have been done in bank transfers today.
Go ahead. Lay it on me. What's the number? Let's go to the toad board. What's the number?
$15 billion has been moved in bank transfers today alone.
And you know
every Friday. What?
And you know what this comes back to?
What's
the
that?
Reason why banks are also interested in comprehensive reform and why they don't want to talk about drug trade. Because banks
exactly.
are moving companies. They are moving companies. And what do I mean by a moving company? If you were going to move from, you live in, I guess, Baltimore, Maryland right now?
No, I live right outside Washington, D.C.
Okay, so if you're going to move from your home outside D.C., let's say to California, Allied Van Lines would ask you how many rooms of furniture, how many pieces of furniture, is it a private house or is it an apartment, and how far are we going to move it? They don't care if it's French provincial. They don't care if you bought it in IKEA. They don't care if it doesn't matter. All they want to know is how many pieces, how far are we moving it, because that's what they charge you by. The banks don't care if the money they're moving came because of a corporation merging with another company, because of a prostitute turning tricks, because of a drug dealer consummating a drug deal, or because a foreign visiting professor got a paycheck for teaching physics in a college classroom. It doesn't matter. As the saying goes, all money is green. If they move the money, they just want to know where they're moving it to and how much they can make by moving the money. So they don't care. They are the silent partner for every transaction, legal, illegal. Doesn't matter. They get their piece of the action. There was an interesting article. I believe it was Newsweek that had the article. It was called Too Big to Jail. These banks put aside a slush fund of billions of dollars, billions, in case the government says, oops, you moved drug money and you didn't report it, they say, okay, how much? We're hitting you with a $3 billion fine. They say, okay, here's your check. Have a nice day. No banker, folks, has ever gone to jail, or at least not in, I don't know how many years, for moving drug money. No banker. So what does that tell you? They don't care. For them, that fine is simply the cost of doing business. It's like a bus company paying for the maintenance of its buses.
But it's also like this. If you, I will tell you, listeners, if any of your listeners go down to Mexico or they go down to Central America, you will find that banks down there open 7 days a week. They don't close.
They're open seven days a week in New York now. Did you know that? 24/7.
No,
not just 7 days a week. Nonstop. The money wire services along Roosevelt Avenue. Do you know we drove by there to film? I was with my friend Mark Hager, who's a history professor in North Carolina. He did a film that I'm in, a documentary. And he filmed along the border, and I said, Mark, you need to come to New York. He came to New York 1:30 in the morning, 1 o'clock in the morning. I said, let's just drive by the neighborhood, so I'll show you where we'll come and film tomorrow. Fortunately, they had their camera with them. I didn't realize that these outfits are now running 24/7. 1 o'clock in the morning, Kevin, there was a line of people in every one of those establishments that wire the money. The money wire services, the remitters, now have these big yellow and black signs, huge signs. It's like a billboard. And what does it say?
Yes.
Open 24/7, 7 days
money
a week, 365 days a year.
And even down in these countries, because I've seen it myself, you go down there, the banks do nothing but money transfer. There's no ATM machine. There's no checking accounts. There's
no,
nothing.
No, it's just moving the money. And they need to be open 24/7 because they're covering not only the wages from the illegal aliens, but the drug deals.
And not only that, these things that they call a bank in these countries, they're about the size of a walk-in closet.
Yes.
One desk, one computer, and all the young lady in there is trained to do is move money.
Yep.
And then for every dollar that is transferred, the bank gets 20 cents. Ah, so if you're moving $15 billion every week.
Look at the amount of money they're making.
Right. So, like you said, you go into New York, you see all these, whether it be in Mexico, whether it be in India, whether it be in China, whether it be in Senegal, Africa, everyone is moving money around the world. $15 billion every week is transferred through Deutsche Bank, PNC,
HSBC.
You name any of your big banks.
HSBC and the small operations and Western Union.
Yeah.
And Western Union. And in fact, I'll tell you a funny story about Western Union since you asked or didn't. Tom Tancredo, when he was chairman of the Immigration Reform Caucus, and I testified for Tom 5 weeks after 9/11 without permission and found I didn't have a job the next day, by the way. They used my injured leg as an excuse, but the timing was remarkable. I came back from the hearing, and the next morning a package arrived by overnight super-duper express mail telling me that I was no longer an agent. It was kind of remarkable timing. Right. But what was interesting was he had come up with the idea that we should be taxing the money that gets wired out of the United States. Immediately, a guy by the name of Charlie Fote, who at the time was the chairman, the First Data Corporation, took First Data Corp and moved the company's headquarters from Atlanta to Colorado, the state where Tancredo operated out of.
Right.
First Data Corporation at the time was the parent company for Western Union.
Western Union.
And he said, you know what, I'm starting a political action committee. You want to tax that money, and I'm going to knock you out of Congress.
Yeah, indeed.
So understand what we're dealing with, folks. This is all about the flow of money. I love Harry Truman's statement. Bankers are nobody's friend. They will only lend you money after you can prove you didn't need it in the first place. And here's my proposition. The next time your lawn needs mowing or your roof needs replacing or your house needs painting, why don't you call up your friendly banker and say to the guy, you know what? You own 48% of my house. I want you to mow 48% of my lawn, paint 48% of the house that you own, and put the roof on 48% of the roof since that's your share of the house. See how it works out.
And see how quick you get hung. See how quick you get hung up.
How's that for a unique idea?
That's a very unique idea. But like you said, what we're laying out for you listeners is why people in Congress, people in the industry, people, the big banks, all want amnesty. It's about making money. It's not about compassion. It's about making money. When you can move $15 billion a week through banks, through money transfers, through all those things, and like I told you, these banks are making 20 to 25 to 35, in some cases, 35 cents on a dollar. Imagine what that is in money.
And by the way, for the most part, the money is leaving the United States. This is the looting of America, aided,
right,
abetted, encouraged by the banks and the people they pay off.
They are like the fence.
You know what a fence is? A fence is the guy that sells stolen property. The banks are operating like fences.
And you're right. But the American people are the ones who are paying the price, because when these illegals come here, they get health care. They get taken care of. They get a social security.
But that drains more money out of the economy, but nobody cares. Do you see? The idea is, as long as they're getting their piece of the action, they don't care. People are selfish. People buy the nice clothing. Do you remember the whole thing with whether it was Kathy Lee Gifford? I believe she really didn't know what was going on. But we used to have sweatshops in New York City. I used to raid those sweatshops. They were awful. They were hell holes. Think back to the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire.
Yes.
You know what? They had a similar fire in Bangladesh 2 years ago, but instead of hundreds, it involved over 1,000 young women who died.
I remember that.
When we tell people you can't have these conditions in America, when we tell companies you got to clean up the environment, they say, yeah, okay, fine. What do? They go to countries that don't care about the environment. So ultimately, the crap blows around the world, and we get it anyway.
Right.
But they're doing it overseas. Because the other countries don't care. They're poisoning the water, they're poisoning the air, they're exploiting the people, and the profits continue, and the average person goes into a store and buys a nice suit or buys a nice shirt or a nice blouse or a pair of shoes, and it comes in a nice fancy box with all kinds of fancy ribbons and paper, and they think, oh, how nice is this? And what they don't realize is that maybe some 11-year-old little girl sewed that shirt in some hellhole in some third-world country that, you know, living in swamp conditions. Understand what the problem is, folks. We have become oblivious to human beings exploiting other human beings, and it's happening around the world, and eventually we are driving down our own standard of living so that our economy will not be much better than that of a third-world country. See, borders exist on another level besides the military level. And I had this conversation with a friend on Capitol Hill. I'm going to give you a unique way of thinking of borders of a country. The borders of different countries can act as a lock in a canal. When you go to Canada, we're pretty much at the same standard of living, education, health care, environmental conditions are very similar. There's almost no difference. When you walk across the bridge into Matamoros from Brownsville, Texas, and I have. When you sit in El Paso and look across the border into Mexico, I have. When you go into Tijuana from San Diego, and I have. As soon as you cross that border, you know you're in a third world country.
Yeah.
You know the standard of living is way different. Education, way different. Health care, way different. So the border helps the way that the locks in the Panama Canal help so that you don't have a flood. Well, if you take down the border, just like if you remove the locks from the Panama Canal, think of what would happen. Imagine if you blew up the locks in the Panama Canal, how quickly would the water overrun the Isthmus of Panama and flood the whole area because of the inequality in the water levels? That's what we're witnessing with our economy because we're taking down the border that's supposed to regulate the flow of money and keep things relatively stable. You remove that border, you lose stability. You lose economic stability. You lose political stability. Your thoughts, Kevin?
My thoughts are you are absolutely correct. When you remove the quote unquote border, when you remove the canal locks, the flood comes in. The flood comes in. Like you said, and I've been through the Panama Canal.
So you know what I'm talking about. Is that a reasonable analogy?
Yes. The Pacific side is higher than the Atlantic side. Most
right.
people don't know that.
Uh-huh.
Okay? If you remove those locks, even the Japanese were going to attack the locks on the Pacific side during World War II to
yep.
inundate the Isthmus of Panama. What I'm trying to say is if you remove those locks when it comes down to immigration, you have a flood of people coming in who are not only getting in, but they're willing to work for money to make the people who remove those locks
yep.
wealthier. When you have a person call you a nativist, when you have a person call you a purist, okay, names hurt people. We are a society, Michael, where no one likes to be called a racist. No one wants to be called a racist.
And
no,
that's a tribute to our decency as Americans.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. These people are playing on our decencies to
mm-hmm.
make us fools. They are playing on our decencies by telling us, look, if you don't allow us to do what we're doing, or if you hold us accountable for anything, you are not a decent human being. A decent human being, a decent American, in my opinion, would be looking out for his brother versus an illegal coming in. When you, like I said, when your neighbor has to pack up and move, and don't get me wrong, Michael, corporations move all the time.
Oh, absolutely.
But this Great Recession has made us a nation of migrants along the same lines of the Great Depression. People are moving to find jobs. Kids are going to college, getting doctorates, getting degrees, getting master's degrees, but are forced to move back home with their parents.
Yep.
There is no reason that an able-bodied college graduate of 30-something should be living at home and competing with an illegal to get a job. In my opinion, that student has worked hard, obtained a degree, I'm not saying a degree is to, you know, all of a sudden I get a degree, I demand a job. No, you have to put in some effort. But if he's putting, he or she is putting in that effort, they're filling out 50 resumes every month, and they're getting, oh, well, you know, we'll keep your resume on file and call you back. Okay, how does that look in a decent nation? When someone just crosses the border yesterday, comes in and says, hi, I have a fake Social Security number, here I am, I'll work for anything, and says, can you work, can you start tomorrow? Is that
yep.
decent? Is that, that's what I was saying in my press release in Project 21. It is decent when Americans have jobs, when Americans are putting money in banks, okay? But like I said, there's not much money when Americans put money in banks because they don't move it around. We don't move our money around. We demand to be treated like decent employees.
Well, and here's, all right, so let me just make a point here. Look, the bottom line, we have got to develop a thick skin. It is not anti-immigrant to insist on enforcing the laws. I can tell you my own observations as an agent working narcotics cases for 15 years. The people most likely injured or killed, the people most likely to be victimized by transnational criminals are the members of the ethnic immigrant communities that are most similar to the criminals, not just from Latin America, whether it's Russia, whether it's Asia, Africa, the Caribbean, Europe, the Middle East, doesn't matter. The immigrant communities are where the most damage is being done because of transnational criminals. It's not a matter of being anti-immigrant, which is a false claim. It is a matter of being pro-enforcement. And I want you folks to focus on this because this is the response that you need to give. First of all, never, ever, under any circumstances, permit your enemy, your opponent, to define you. If you allow that to happen, I assure you, you will lose. You need to pick up your marbles, put them in that little bag, and go home because the game is now over. We are pro-enforcement. The same immigration
yeah.
laws that tell us who to keep out and who to kick out also tell us who we can let in. Every year we admit roughly 1 million lawful immigrants. These are people who are immediately placed on the pathway to United States citizenship. These are the same laws that tell us who we may give political asylum to, and we do for thousands of aliens every year. These are the same laws that tell us who we may naturalize, and last year I believe it was over 600,000 aliens who acquired U.S. citizenship in accordance with those very same immigration laws. And it's those laws that enable us to admit tens of millions of non-immigrant visitors as students, as tourists, as people doing jobs. So the immigration laws provide balance. If you're pro-enforcement, you want a system with balance, a system that protects America and Americans, a system that protects the immigrant communities. If you want a free-for-all on the border, then you're talking about anarchy and chaos. You're talking about the movement of criminals and drugs and terrorists and aliens who would ultimately wreak havoc, first on the immigrant communities and ultimately on communities clear across the country, irrespective of ethnicity. When you look at the Italian mob and the history of the mob, when you look at Asian organized crime, any crime group, first generation hammers their own ethnicity the hardest. Subsequent generations become more comfortable within the society that they're living, and they become equal opportunity assaulters. So in the beginning, it's the immigrant communities that take the brunt of the violence, the brunt of the exploitation. This is hardly anti-immigrant to say, no, we don't want that to happen. You don't let strangers into your home without looking through the peephole. As a country, we must not do anything different from that as well. We know that we are at risk. We know that today there are terror training camps in the tri-border region of Brazil, where Brazil abuts with Argentina and Paraguay. Hamas, Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda, all operating there. We know that Iran is flying their shock troops, the Quds, into Caracas, Venezuela with weekly flights. We know that we are in a very bad situation right now with Iran, with their nuclear program, with the meltdown in the Middle East. It is believed that the rockets being fired into Israel from Gaza is being supplied or are being supplied by Iran. We are in a perilous era. If ever there was a time for America's borders to have integrity, for America's immigration system to have integrity, this is it. The one thing I find encouraging, there will be a hearing within the next 2 weeks to be held by the Homeland Security Committee in the House of Representatives by Mike McCall. That hearing is going to do exactly what I've been saying for the longest time they need to do. I'd like to believe that maybe Congressman McCall listened. They're going to be holding a hearing about how the 9/11 Commission findings square with what is going on right now along our borders. And this is a hearing that I can't wait to see happen. We need to go back to the fundamental concept that a country without secure borders can no more stand than can a house without walls. You cannot defend a country without secure borders. Without the willingness and the ability to secure borders, you have no legitimate need for a military. I am hopeful that that will become the conclusion of the hearing that's going to be held, I believe it's on the 25th of this month, over in the House of Representatives at the Homeland Security Committee. As we're getting towards the bottom of the program, why don't you put the website out there, Kevin Martin, and tell us a little bit about Project 21 and your role with that terrific organization, my friend Judy Kent, and all the other wonderful folks over there.
Yes, well, first of all, you can reach us at www.project21, the word project, and the number 21.org. I am a advisor to the National Council to Project 21. I've been with Project 21 since for about 14 years. I'm an environmental contractor here in Maryland and the Washington, D.C. area as well. And actually, you can reach me on Twitter at K-E-V-L-M-A-R. I made it very simple, and if you want to talk to me about immigration or any other issue, I'm more than welcome to talk. But Project 21, we basically take a look at the issues of the day, whether it be immigration, the economy, politics, any issue that is of major importance to not only African Americans, but to Americans in general. We right. do not discriminate. We take the issues hard. And, yeah, a lot of us are conservatives. I for one, am a conservative independent. I don't believe in belonging to either of the parties because it's basically the same side of the same coin, if you ask me.
The Republicrats.
The Republicrats, I love that term. But really, when it comes down to issues like security, jobs, I am as red, white, and blue as anyone out there. And we were talking about immigration this evening, and that's just one of many issues that I comment on for Project 21.
Well, you know, I'm going to wrap things up. We're getting close to the bottom of the hour. I got to tell you, it's always fun having you join me. You've done this before. We have to have you back again.
I love coming on your show, Michael, whether it be immigration, whether it be some stupid comment that somebody has made in the media.
You mean that
happens?
Does that ever happen?
What?
That some politician makes a stupid comment? I can't imagine.
Yeah.
Our leaders being guilty of that.
You know, they were talking about foot and mouth disease a couple of years ago. I said, no, we've been having that in Washington for the last 300 years.
And what's amazing is watching them walk in that position. That really gets to be entertaining.
I sit around every day, and the best foot and mouth person I say in Washington, D.C. right now has to be Harry Reid. When he came out the other day and said the borders are secure, everybody went, "Oh, Harry, you know, you're getting up there in age. You're getting a little senile, you know." And then, of course, there's Thad Cochran walking into the wrong caucus, but, you know, that's neither here nor there.
Goodness gracious.
But you know, I really do enjoy coming on your show. I love talking about the issues because I want my fellow Americans to understand that it's America first. It should always be Americans first. It doesn't matter whether you call yourself a Democrat, a Republican, an independent, progressive, whatever. Like I said, when you see people in your community suffering, and then someone else, then a politician looking at you and saying, "Oh, well, you're more concerned about the suffering of them than a poor child down on the border," I'm more concerned about anyone who's an American.
Yes.
I mean, it shouldn't be like this. And unless more Americans start standing up and protesting and raising hell and not being silenced with fake words or phony scandals or things like that, then we're bound to fail.
I could not agree with you more, Kevin.
And that's what I really want to say. I mean, we've talked about immigration tonight. We've run our mouths. We batted our gums. But at the end of the day, when you turn off that radio and you're sitting in your thoughts and thinking about what's been said, you're the person that's going to act. You're the person that's going to have to act. You, Mike, are a radio show host. I'm a political analyst. But really what it comes down to is boots on the ground. You
yep.
said it yourself as an agent before. It takes boots on the ground. And
mm-hmm.
picking up a sign and going out and making your political objectives known is not racist, especially when you are trying to help the guy next to you. We've always been a nation that picks each other up. And that's my monologue for the evening.
It absolutely works for me, Kevin. Absolutely works for me. You know, and I always make that point that democracy is not a spectator sport. You know, we go to a restaurant, we're very specific about the food that we want to eat, the way that we want it prepared. If we don't like the meal, we leave. You know, we may send
right.
it back, but if that doesn't do it, we leave. We need
yeah.
to treat our politicians no differently from that server, waiter, waitress in the restaurant. We need to place our order with the expectation that they will deliver what we've asked for, and if they don't, we need to make them leave.
Or treat politicians like diapers, as a great sign said once. Politicians are like diapers, and they both
yes.
need to be changed often for the same reason.
Exactly. I like that as well. Kevin Martin, I want to thank you for being on my program. I want to thank all of you this evening. For spending Friday with me, as we do at the end of every week. It's always good to, as I like to say, play that game of catch-up, look at the crazy stuff going on. There are many problems around the world. We're looking at the shootdown of that airliner over the Ukraine. We're looking at Israel and its situation with its neighbors. This is the time for American citizens to really start to take politics even more seriously than who's winning Dancing with the Stars or who's going to win the World Series or play in the World Series. Democracy has certain responsibilities, and one of the key responsibilities that we all have is to educate ourselves, because without knowledge of the issues, it's impossible to make reasonable decisions as to who to vote for. It's impossible to know what advice you want to convey or what suggestions or what demands, if you will, you want to make on your elected politicians. So living in a democracy doesn't come easy, but it's the best way for the greatest number of Americans to live decent, productive, enjoyable lives. The future of our country, the future of our children and their children hang in the balance. Nothing is more serious or important than that. Again, I want everybody to know that I appreciate your taking time out to visit with me, visit today with Kevin Martin from Project 21. Please go to my website, michaelcutler.net. Go to capsweb.org, Front Page Magazine. I'll throw a plug in for them, in American Currency. Kevin, again, Project 21's website is?
www.project21.org.
Perfect. And I thank all of you for joining me this evening. Kevin, I wish you a wonderful weekend. I thank you for joining me tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, I look forward to seeing you again next week, same time, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.